Chapter 26. You ask the right questions at the right time. It's basic police work. Detective Arnie Bateman didn't ask the right questions when he had the chance. A man went to prison for a crime he didn't commit. The man who did commit the crime lived to kill again. I can't blame Detective Bateman for this, of course. I didn't ask the right questions either. Elena's brother, Ryan, finally did ask the right questions, but at the wrong time. He paid for that mistake with his life. I almost joined him, but in the end I survived, and, after an eventful few hours at the Niles, Michigan train station, I was there to see Tanner Page taken away in handcuffs, thanks to a few phone calls to the FBI, and especially to an agent named Janet Long. My concussion was officially listed as Grade 4. I had lost consciousness twice, once for a few minutes, after Page first hit me, then later for a good couple of hours in the minivan. It takes a while to get over something like that. If you came into the Glasgow Inn any time in the month of September, you'd see me sitting by the fireplace, wearing sunglasses. Sudden flashes of bright light really got to me, just destroyed me, not to mention sudden loud noises. Jackie had to take it easy on me that month. I think it almost killed him. When I got over the post-concussion symptoms, I still had a nice new scar on the back of my head. At least this one, I couldn't see when I looked at my own face in the mirror. I took Leon to dinner and told him everything that had happened. I thanked him for all of his help. He said he was sorry he wasn't there to help me in person, even if his wife would have killed both of us when we got back home. Janet called me a couple of weeks after the arrest to give me the general rundown on the legwork she and her fellow agents were doing on the other murders. It was an exhausting process, but they were definitely connecting Tanner Page to each date and location. She also mentioned the possibility of coming up to see me sometime. She said it was her turn to make the long drive. She hasn't made the trip yet. I honestly don't know if she ever will. Maybe we both lied to each other one time too many, even if it was always for the right reasons. I kept in touch with Sergeant Grimaldi. I got back to work on the cabins. Vinny and I replaced another wood stove. On the first day of October, it snowed. Later that month, I received a visit from the King family. They rode up in Mrs. King's sister's powder blue Pontiac Bonneville. It still had the big dent in the front right quarter panel. I put them up in one of the empty cabins. I took them down to the Glasgow Inn to meet Jackie and Vinny. On the second day, I took them to Sault Ste. Marie. We all had a quick beer at the Sioux Brewing Company with Leon. Mrs. King looked tired, but happy. Darrell looked like he wasn't quite sure what he was doing in the Upper Peninsula, or what he was doing with me, but we did shake hands and have a beer together. After all we'd been through, that had to mean something. Tremont was the real enigma those couple of days. He didn't say much at all. After all those years living alone, out on the rails, he was like a feral animal who suddenly finds himself inside a house with a nice bed and regular meals. Add to that the guilt that he had to be feeling. Whether it was truly justified or not, you could look at him and wonder why he didn't do something about Tanner Page back then. He was a scared 14-year-old kid in Detroit, and Page had every advantage over him, including the threat of lethal violence. So maybe you can't really blame him for running away and letting his brother take the fall for him. But there's a big difference between looking at something on paper and waking up in the middle of the night and thinking about what you could have done if only you'd found a way. I could tell Tremont would be living with that for the rest of his life. When we all bundled up and went up to the observation deck overlooking the Sioux Locks, there was a big freighter coming through. The flag was Australian. Mrs. King and Darrell were both shivering and already looking at the stairs, obviously ready to go back to paradise and sit by the fireplace. But Tremont looked out at the big boat that had come all these thousands of miles to be here, and I could tell what he was thinking. I knew he probably wasn't done riding on freight trains. I just hoped he'd always come back, now that he had a place to come back to. On the day they went back to Detroit, Mrs. King gave me one of the biggest hugs of my life. I promised I'd call her. I promised I'd come down to see her again soon.
"Maybe you'll move back to the city someday," she said. "Detroit needs more good people. Otherwise, I don't know if she'll survive."
I promised I'd think about it, but I knew it would never happen. Paradise was my home now. On the night before Halloween, we got more snow. I lay in my bed that night, listening to it fall. I thought about Detroit, the Motor City, Motown, a great city that could still be great again. Then I remembered what night it was. Devil's Night. The night they burned down the empty houses all over the city. It would have been a hard night to be there, watching the sky glow red above every corner of the city. Watching the city I love burning to the ground. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Let It Burn by Steve Hamilton. Copyright 2013 by Steve Hamilton. Performed by Dan John Miller. Performance copyright 2013 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.